kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another review episode lined up for you, and we're starting things off the way these usually start off. Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
It's going all right. Weather's getting a little warmer, which means, unfortunately, I got to mow my lawn now, so there goes some game time there. So I guess it could be worse, because I'm hearing stories from my friends in the Midwest that, I guess by the time this episode happens, it comes out, it'll just happened, but they're expecting a blizzard tomorrow. They're going from the high 60s to a blizzard. Pretty much. I'm hoping that that laugh doesn't result in us getting it as a just desserts.
Oh, my God. I wouldn't be surprised at this goddamn point.
Keep that shit over there. I don't want bad weather. I just want this to get back up to where it needs to be and be content. And but aside from that, just trying to get clean, trying to clean up around this darn house, get my spring cleaning on, and just generally have a decent time. How about you?
I had a pretty decent weekend and early week, kind of a mixed bag. This weekend, obviously, was WrestleMania, so I enjoyed NXT TakeOver, the Hall of Fame, WrestleMania.
Real quick, how long was that? Because I've heard a lot of articles come and bring up that mention that WrestleMania was too long, and I've heard people reference 8 hours, which I think is an exaggeration, but I don't know. I didn't watch it.
Seven and a half.
Seriously?
7.5 hours.
Didn't WrestleManias back in the day used to run from like 8 to 10?
Oh, they used to go like 8 to 11, but this one, it started at 5. The pre-show started at 5, but they had 4 matches on the pre-show, so people are counting the pre-show as WrestleMania, which they should.
But yeah, that started at 5. Sitting.
Yeah, that started at 5 and it went until 12:30.
Oh my God. Yeah, because someone was saying, keep in mind, I don't know these names but or people, but it was like a woman's match and she apparently did like won a pretty awesome bout and took, I guess it was a second belt. And apparently the crowd was just kind of like they couldn't even, they were too tired to cheer. It was like, yay, I guess. I'm ready to go home. I'm tired. Like, it's a shame because, like, I've seen some people say that they felt that meant that no one cared, but I've also seen a number of people say, like, no, people cared. They were just too tired to express it.
Yeah, pretty much. I was fucking exhausted. I thought the show was going to be over around 11. So, like, 11 o'clock's approaching, and we're like, oh my God, we still have 4 matches to go. What the hell? Like, how long is this going to go?
Well, you got to admit, on the positive, though, this is probably the most bang for your buck you've ever gotten on a pay-per-view event.
Especially with the WWE Network that costs only $9.99 a month.
Hi-o.
Yeah, so WrestleMania for $10. Fucking A right.
That's a good deal. We used to pay like $50 to $100 to get it.
I know. And now it's just $10 a month and you get everything.
That's value, baby.
Goddamn right. But aside from that, my Monday-Tuesday was fun because I had not one, but 2 dentist trips this week.
Oh, I don't even know about the one. You had a second one?
I had 2 trips to the dentist. On Monday, it was, that was my primary visit. It was, like, my teeth are fucked up. I like soda. My teeth are fucked up. I'm missing a couple. And I, you know, I have a bunch of cavities that they got to try and figure out what we're going to do. So I went in for a consultation and they were like, well, we have 3 options. One is we can spend a lot of money on crowns and trying to repair what's there and, you know, doing what we can with what you got. That's going to be the most.
Dream, but you got the money.
Yeah, that's the most expensive option. The middle option is to extract the ones that are pretty much beyond hope and then get partials for the back teeth. Mm-hmm. And then the cheapest option is going to be rip them all out and start from scratch with dentures.
Which one did you take?
I don't know yet. we were waiting to find out the cost of everything, because they have to go through numbers and get in touch with our insurance and see what they could cover and this and that. So we're going to find out eventually what the prices are going to be and discuss it from there. We're looking at the second option.
I'm genuinely hopeful for at least the middle one, though, depending on how far along your cavities are, might even be feasible. Like, okay, well, maybe we can get some crowns that we can space out the appointments, but I don't know, because dental insurance is bullshit. Oh, and yeah. I've announced that for years now. Like, I have a partial crown implant that I started back in 2015. I just left it abandoned. I'm like, eh. I'll get around to it someday, I'm sure. Dental sucks.
Yeah.
I did forget one. No, I was going to say something, but I didn't realize you had something. You were going to say something else.
I was going to bring up the second visit, which at the end of the first one, they're like, well, no matter what option you're going to go with, we should probably clean up what's there.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, all right, well, we're going to schedule you. I can't say the word schedule. What the hell? We're going to throw you for an appointment. When are you available for your first cleaning? We'll probably have to split this up into two visits to clean what's there.
Wow.
Thankfully, it was just one. But
I've never heard of a split cleaning.
Yeah. Well, like I said, my teeth are pretty fucked up. The old dentist I went to got in a car wreck, and he hasn't been working for a good year now. So, and I haven't had a full on cleaning in years. So they brought me in. They were like, oh, when are you available? I'm like, you tell me when to be here and I'll be here. And they're like, how about tomorrow at 10? I'm like, well, I guess I'm coming tomorrow at 10.
And if there's one thing I learned is that cleanings, I used to think they didn't matter. Those fuckers matter.
Oh, they matter.
I didn't go for, like, I guess it was like 2 or 3 years, because I didn't have dental insurance at the time. I was kind of trying to get my ducks in a row. And when I finally got, I was like, oh, time to go get my teeth checked out. And I showed up and I brush every day. I brush, and I'm not a regular flosser, but I floss here and there, but I brush every day. I show up and they was like, holy crap, you got, they were just spotting cavities. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Last time I was here, my teeth were great. It's like, yeah, and when you were last here, you weren't being regular with your visits, so we weren't able to spot stuff. Like,
yeah.
Well, ain't this some John Brown pickle brine? But
John Brown pickle brine?
Yeah, you know, that's what dental thoughts do to me. They make me think of weird beverages. But now I'm like a regular every freaking year on the dot. They got me in there and I'm using Sensodyne like nobody's business, because I want that extra clean without the enamel ripping. So
yeah,
do it to it. I did forget one other thing to mention that might be cool that you might want to hear about, might be interested in.
Sure. Let's hear it.
So the other thing I did this weekend was I was down in DC on Friday, because apparently the Library of Congress is actually going to start archiving video game music of all freaking things.
Oh.
Like, they recently decided that video game music is something worth maintaining and keeping a record of. I didn't even know what to think of that, but I was like, well, my friend was like, R&P co-host, he was like, you want to go? I'm like, why the heck not? I am a game music doofus. I want to be in for that. So we packed up our car and we moved to Beverly. We went to D.C. And it was actually a nice time, albeit a little rain. They had like a little arcade that they set up down there. And there was like this weird concert they did where it was like, for the first time, this guy is composing music for a game. And you get to hear him like in the process of trying to do it. Like, so it was like a first time listen. And it was like, oh, we get to give a little bit of a critique on this track. But the odd thing about it was that they tried to link it with this little side game where it was like an art picture on the screen, and like pictures were moving around inside of it, like people were walking and stuff like that. And they were saying, okay, press this button on your phone. It's like a left arrow and a right arrow. You have to press the button to manipulate or influence how the image goes. But they told us in no way what the arrows did to influence the track and the scenery. So people were just like mashing on their phones, like lift, lift, lift. And it's like it did anything. And then the guy later goes, well, what actually is happening is when you press these arrows, you're changing the flow of time. And he goes in his descriptive where he explains that, and then everybody was trying to do it on the next one with this bit more insight. Nothing happened because no one could understand what the hell to do or how to do it, even though the instructions were so simple, because the thing was just weird and unresponsive. So the music was great, but their experiment just did not take at all. And it was actually kind of funny, the experience, but it was overall an interesting experience. I'm hoping that if they get a full-on exhibit up there, more people can go down there and check it out. And I will definitely be making a visit again to see, you know, just what they actually have available for people to see.
Nice. I need to get to DC again. I haven't, like, I want to go to the museums and just walk around, and I don't know.
It's a nice trip, man. Like, you take the metro. Once you take the metro to get into once you take the metro to get to, at least like certain areas of DC, you can pretty much do most of it on foot if you want to. You don't have to worry about driving and dealing with the parking. It's a nice little trip, and the food down, they got some great food options, some really good ones. So it is a decent time. I recommend it wholeheartedly.
You know what I recommend?
It's soda.
Yeah, that.
Orange vanilla.
Orange vanilla Coke. No, I was told I can't drink that much soda anymore, so I am drinking a bottle of water.
Good. Maybe that'll be my incentive to try to push off soda, because I'm at that trick again, because, you know, sugar-free and diet, I'm all there. Like, oh, yeah, drink those. You don't have to worry about calories. But I feel like there's got to be some kind of side effect to that, because I'm still fat as a damn whale despite going to the gym and stuff like that. And, yeah, I know there's other stuff in my diet, too, but soda is probably one of the most...
Are you calling yourself fat? When you're talking to me?
Hey, there are varying degrees, okay? I'm not saying that I'm going to say you can't talk, Joe, because I'm a rotunda. No, I'm saying
that... You said you're fat as a whale.
Well, I do still feel that way. I'm not going to deny that. Just
what
saying
the hell
that.
Does that make me?
Another whale. We can swim together.
A fatter whale.
It's all good, though.
Oh my god, Pernell, what are we gonna do with you?
Well, roll me back into the ocean for starters. That's swimming to do. Don't worry, I'll take the phone. Reviews can still be done underwater.
Very true, very true. So what's your verdict?
That's a lot of air bubbles there, buddy. Ridiculous.
Anyway, speaking of reviews, should we get started with these?
Let's give this a nice tango and trot.
All right. Well, first game to talk about tonight is called Frayn Dragon's Odyssey, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released April 5th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99, and is a Play Anywhere title, so you get it on both. Kuna, a boy from the Fire Dragon tribe, is one day summoned by the god that reigns over the world above, Veneth, and is told to bring Eskewed, a lost girl from the Angel Clan, back to Veneth. With his childhood friend Reel, the dragon of the Dragon Chief, the daughter of the Ice Dragon Chief, he follows after the missing girl and sets out for the vast world below the clouds, only to find mysterious and fun adventures. Pernell, tell us about it.
Well, the dragon of the Dragon Chief. This one is a bit of a weirdy for me. So the idea is that this game is an action RPG. And the idea is that, you know, you're down on the earth, which is, I guess it's probably like, it's considered the earth. And you are trying to find Eskewed. But in the process of looking for Eskewed, you stumble across some weird stuff, like in relation to most particularly a pretty dark cult of sorts, like a dark church or cult. Basically, you know, I'm talking about the JRPG fair of evil religion bit, I think it's considered a TV trope. But in addition to that, you end up meeting a bunch of different like people on Earth and like various villagers, and you help them with their problems as you proceed through. Just because while you're looking for her, you're also trying to experience what the planet has to offer. You're trying to meet new people and see just what's so cool about the life below the clouds where you come from. And this is done through a series of events. You start out by building yourself a house, because this kid clearly has power on top of power to just build a home in a day. But he builds a house, and then you proceed to go to your first town, where you will immediately get introduced to the Dark Church and thrust on a life, on an adventure where you have to kind of help this town and prevent them from having to succumb to sacrificing a girl to the Dark Church. So this is just setting up the base of the game, but the gameplay of the game is the meat and potatoes of it. So it's an action adventure game. You go to locations, and while you are there, there is a button to do like melee attacks. So you press the button and you go like punch, punch, punch. So you start with like a fist weapon. So you just punch gun. And as you kill enemies, you eventually charge up a meter on the left-hand side of the screen. And that meter, once filled up, will allow you to use your special move, which will allow you to like pretty much dash through enemies at an alarming rate. And it's pretty much like the best way to kill guys until it wears off, in which case you're back to charging it up again. Alternatively, there is also your friend, Real, who is a magician, and her attack method is by pressing the other button, which is like, I guess, the B button. I'm looking at an Xbox controller because I never get the layout right. you press the B button to use magic spells, usually projectile magic. And what ends up happening is you can either hold down the button to charge up the spell and launch like a larger attack, or you can just like kind of spam the attack, the magic button, you'll just spray bullets everywhere, or you'll spray bullets as see fit. As you move around in dungeons, you'll find access to new weapons that are typically based on short, medium, and long range. Typically, like, and they're also elemental based, like fire, ice, lightning, and I want to say wind was one of them. I'm pretty sure it was, but I never bothered with wind stuff, so meh. And then you also find various armors. You can put armor on. You can also find new magic spells to equip, which Real will be using. Now, the combat in this game is where I have like a weird love-hate relationship with it. So, like I said earlier, you press the attack button to do like melee strikes. Now, with the short-range weapon, you're constantly always surrounded by enemies, because I need to clarify that there are a lot of enemies on the screen almost all the time. There's a lot of fodder, and they do hurt you. They're not necessarily like, say, necessarily throwing projectiles or anything like that. Some enemies do, but for the most part, it's just like a lot of guys on the screen who are attacking you, and you're trying to like just mow them down. And suffice to say, I felt like a lot of the time I was just kind of surrounded by monsters, mashing the attack button, specifically in hopes of just getting the charge meter up. Because once that's charged up, you can do your charge move, which is honestly a screen clear, because you kind of just start dashing into everybody. And just when you dash into, you pretty much kill them, because you're doing like 10 times the damage you normally would do. So it's like brrr, just screaming through everybody till you level up. Now, the downside to that also is that whenever you get a new item, like a dagger or a yo-yo or something, you'll get a new charge attack related to that weapon and its element. But for the most part, they're all dashes. Like you're pretty much charging through foes. So the variety wasn't there for me so much, but I still enjoyed the feeling of dashing through monsters like a bullet. It felt nice. A controllable omnidirectional bullet, I should say. So I did enjoy that aspect of the game. But I enjoyed the dashing component, but I wasn't too big on the basic melee component. So you're probably thinking like, okay, so is that really too big of a deal? Cause you're kind of just, you know, you'll run through enemies, you'll just slash them and you'll kill them or whatever. Well, bosses make this a bit more of an annoyance too. So to give you an example, the first boss is pretty much, I'm not going to say what it is, cause you might want to see it for yourself, but you're in a giant arena, like a ring. You're running around the outer rim of it, and the monster itself is chasing you around. And it can, if it touches you, it does damage to you, and it throws projectiles sometimes. Now, you might think to yourself, well, use your melee stuff and mix it up with your super if you can get it, or use your magic. Well, the problem that I experienced, whether using a long-range weapon or a short-range weapon, those could have just been considered my skill level for all some people would say, is that I was trying to hit it, but I felt like no matter how I sliced it, I was almost always in harm's way when I tried to hit it. Like, I was pretty much getting my ass handed to me until I did the cheapo method, which was just get on the other side of the ring and just throw magic bullets until the thing died. Just basically keep half a rank away from the guy at all times and throw magic at it. That took me about 10 minutes to do, but I was able to do it. But for all I know, maybe it's possible that I didn't do enough of one thing you can do in the game to make your weapon stronger, which is to power them up using spirit gems. Spirit gems can be acquired and located throughout the game. And when you use them at a, I want to say a blacksmith, but it's really just a gem dealer or vendor or whatever. When you go to like the, basically the, like a bus call them a blacksmith. When you go to the blacksmith, you can use spirit gems to upgrade your weapons to like different levels. So it's the same weapon, but it's level 1, 2, 3 of that, and it has higher attack power when you do the level up. So maybe it's possible I could have just done more damage per second, or damage per second, and just hopefully kind of steamrolled them a little bit more than what I did with my method, which was pew 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 pew. So it's a weird feeling that I would have for the game. Also, I meant to mention there's also a crafting system which you can use to kind of upgrade armor. And in addition to that, there is a gifting system where as you make new friends on the map, you can communicate with them and kind of talk with them, but you can also give them gift items to increase your bonds and relationships with those characters. So if you find yourself feeling like, this character who almost got sacrificed to the turd tribe is actually not half bad. She's kind of nice. I'm going to give her this apple pie because she loves apple pie. And nothing wrong with that. You can do that. It gives you an option to make that move and just kind of be nice and forge these bonds with the other kid, with these sub characters.
I just love the thought process of, well, you almost got sacrificed. Here's a pie.
Enjoy. It's a num 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 num. But also it has like the side system that I think Kimco games in general offer these, where like I think it's you pretty much either get like the DLC based purchases. I didn't actually experiment if there's like a item. No, I think there's all DLC, specifically DLC purchase where you can like kind of upgrade like your experience gains or your change the encounter rate, things of that nature. Though in addition, there's also a casino town where you can play games or also just trade in money. Usually just the cheap out method, I go just get money and then trade it up until you eventually can afford something. Yeah. But you can get like equipment that can also do similar things like that. It gives you experience boosts and increased magic and also increased gold yield and stuff like that. So there is a bit going on in the game. And I would say that if you are looking like in need of an action RPG game, this definitely does that. But I really wish that the combat system in this game weren't so like I described earlier, where you're just kind of feeling like you ever play a game, like Zelda, for example, like not even talking about the newer Zelda, I'm talking about the old Zelda, Zelda 1, right? Mm-hmm. And you have a sword, you swing it, you hit an Octorok. What happens? The Octorok flashes, he gets a bounce back, like he has a knockback effect. You can tell that you are effectively attacking and harming this Octorok. There's a feedback. You get feedback. But in this game, aside from a bar that disappears at the bottom of the screen, there's no like feedback. There's no like, okay, I'm hitting him. I can sense the impact, so to speak, quote unquote. So it's like you'll get swarmed by these enemies and you're like hitting them, but they're just kind of like there, like paper dolls taking whacks. It'd be nice if there was like more feedback there so I can tell I'm doing damage. So I can tell this weapon's kicking ass. I'm going to keep using it for a bit so I can get my girl more apple pie. I mean, it just makes sense to do. I'm not sure why that didn't happen, but that's just the thing that comes to mind for me. Some people might not think about that, but you know how I am. I can get a little weirdly picky sometimes.
If there's an issue with the game, you got to bring it up.
This is very true, good sir. The writing itself is okay. It's JRPG fare. You're not going to get like a Tolstoy novel or anything out of this. You're going to get two kids. The girl's jealous because she wants the guy to like her because they're friends. And Apple Pie Girl is all up in your business. You'll get, townspeople that say wacky banter. And you'll get like random like desires to help characters where you haven't formed those bonds. That's JRPG 101 in a nutshell. Hey, new to this town, what's going on? What do you mean the cult's taking up? Well, I guess I'll throw myself in harm's way for you people. What's in it for me? I got to buy stuff from the shop still. No discounts. Well, screw you, too. I don't need any of this. For the record, that always has irked me in JRPG and RPGs in general. You are saving towns and lives, making sure they can eat tomorrow because you preserved their crops from like whatever monster crow has been attacking it. And what happens? They tell you thank you and then still shake you down for potion expenses and whatever. It's some bull.
Sons of bitches.
There's the hero life is a thankless gig. Thankless.
Well, overall, $15 on Frayne. What do you think of it?
I would say is a try it in the event that you're looking like in need of looking for an action RPG. It has some shortcomings, But I can see folks that would, I can see folks getting enjoyment out of it, though, especially if you are familiar with other Kimco titles. Just guys, like I said, expect that your attacks won't have that force feed, that impact effect. That feels ever so sweet. But that
oomph.
Exactly, the oomph that I'm kicking ass. Apple pie.
Goddamn apple pie.
God, now I want some. Or those apple pie Oreos, even. I miss those things.
That sounds terrible, actually.
No. They were banging, and I missed them. They was a great. They were graham cracker cookies and just like an apple flavored cream.
Like, okay, I was expecting the chocolate cookies still. So,
Oh no, graham cracker, buddy.
All right, yeah, that sounds better then.
They are delectable.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Vosaria, Lair of the Forgotten, developed and published by Johnny Ostad. Released March 22nd on Xbox One for $4.99, a pump-action 2D side-scrolling game with different enemy types, along with a jump-to-the-roof mechanic that spices up the combat. Avoid traps, survive enemy encounters, and upgrade your weapons and gear to overcome the challenges. Pernell, what is Vosaria?
So from what I could gather about this game, you're stuck on an alien planet, and the aliens are coming to Earth to steal all of his apple pie. Now, your marine force is on a desperate mission to protect the pie from these abominations, because pie's delicious and ain't nobody got time for that.
I just want to take a second to appreciate that if someone skipped the first review and just started with this one, they have no idea what you're talking about with apple pie.
That may as well be the plot of the game, though. I kind of want it to be, though, because even though I don't I have no idea why you're there, you are technically on an alien planet trying to, or it could be underneath Earth or a human city. I don't know. But you are one of a series of Marines who are going underground to take out this alien force and also find your unfortunate, spoiler alert, and they're all dead. But anyway, you're going to find the other Marines to find out what happened to them. So the way this works is that it is a side-scrolling gun-shooting game. Think VVVVVV if you are familiar with that. But mm-hmm. If you are not, just, you know, you're walking, and when you press the button, you invert to the ceiling instead of the floor, and then vice versa. You are traversing the levels by using this mechanic. There's no traditional jump button. It's only the inversion button to get from point A to point B on the level. Within stages, there are a lot of freaking traps. I mean, a lot. Spikes every damn where. There is no tutorial level. You're likely going to get your ass handed to you until you get used to the idea of, like, you know, how to space out your free fall and your, you know, maneuvering, because you can't, like, say, finesse yourself in the air. You can't. You'll see a bunch of spikes on the ceiling, on the floor, and even on the walls, and you'll be needing to jump off the ceiling and go towards the floor and land on a spike-free area. There is no finessing in the middle of the air. When you're falling, that is it. So you'll have to get used to the fact that there's no room for correction. You just have to aim your falls and get them right. Like, you can move left and right, mind you, but I mean, like, you can't, like, stop midair and reverse gravity to slow your fall. That's what I'm referring to.
Oh, okay.
But one thing that is a bit of an annoyance, and I'm not going to lie, I almost was, like, deny this game because of it, is that there's a lot of blind faith in these drops. So there'll be multi-screen descents, and you'll be pretty much falling, hoping to not get hit at the bottom. And it'll be like one of those, like, last minute, oh crap, there's a spike, go to the left, and you might not make the dodge. Think like how Sonic is with some of those speed runs where you're running down the road, and all of a sudden, oh crap, spike against the wall, and you don't have really much time to react to it.
Yeah, just those blind jumps.
Mm-hmm. And enemies can be that way too, in which case, like, sometimes you'll be in situations where your foes will be fighting you in a contained room, and that room will be multiple screens tall, which means that sometimes you'll need to jump to the ceiling or to the floor to evade an enemy, but you don't know what's waiting for you on the other side because you can't see it. So you're hoping there's no monster there, buddy Bido, and then oops-a-daisy, you took a hit. Now, you might have heard me say earlier, I almost put this down as a deny because of that. And you're like, well, you said almost. What does that mean? Well, what that means is that I came away surprisingly enjoying the game once I adjusted to the fact that this annoying concept was just a part of the game. And I made it work to you know, kind of enhance the game, because the game itself is honestly a fun game to play. I enjoy, you know, dodging traps with the inversion and, sealing the floor mechanic. I like the fact that as you progress through levels, you'll come across, you know, dead Marines who will leave behind either a gun that you can use or a sub function for that gun. When you get new guns, you can cycle through them using the trigger button. So you always have all of your weapons available to you. The sub function of the gun can be used with the B button, whereas the other attack button is an X one. And when you use that function, it takes a little bit more ammo. Worth mentioning about the guns also, ammo. The default gun has infinite ammunition, whereas the other weapons need to be, ammo needs to be picked up, either be found on the ground sometimes, or enemies can drop them. Also hitting on levels is items that can be used as upgrades, permanent upgrades for your army soldier, whether it is an increased maxed HP, an increased maxed armor. And when it comes to armor, think also like Doom, where you can pick up little armor icons that will bolster your post HP buffer. That makes sense, right? Post HP buffer.
Yeah, close enough. I know what you mean.
Yeah, buddy. So it allows you to make use of that and buffer up your take up extra hits. You can get also ammo kits that will allow you to extend the maximum amount of ammo you can carry for particular guns. So you'll be going to different levels looking for these things. But if you don't find them, it's not too big a deal, because you can just go back to previously completed levels to try to find them later. And I actually did end up doing that more than a few times, because I'm that kind of guy. I'm a completist. I want all the goods. I just what I do. Like I said, the game itself is honestly enjoyable. I don't even mind the music. It's not like you're not going to be playing it in your car, but it is good while you're playing the game. I did not turn the volume down. I turned it up. It's not bad at all. It's like I said, the game, there's not a lot going on, but what is going on is a great time. I found myself enjoying it. And for the time that it lasts, I had fun with it.
Well, then $5, what do you say?
I honestly would say it's a buy it. I think it's worth it. Just know going in that you're going to have an adjustment period to the inversion dodge spike or gel or fiery bat or whatever dodging to do. But if you can get through that hiccup, the game's a good time.
Awesome. Sounds good. Plus, it's only $5.
That is true. I almost went, fuck it, why not? But nah, I enjoyed it enough that I think it just, I want to recommend it.
Yeah, so fucking buy it.
Exactly.
Well, mix the two together.
Fuck it, why not? Buy it.
All right, last game that you're here to talk about is called Istanbul Digital Edition, developed by Akram Digital and Mobo Studio, published by Akram. Released March 28th on the Switch for $19.99. The official digital adaptation of one of the best board games in history, Istanbul. Purnell, tell us about Istanbul.
Get this out of the way. It's not Constantinople. Done. All right. So,
womp.
I had to do it. It wouldn't have felt right. So, this game was a game I'd heard of for a while, but never got a chance to play the actual like board version of it. Apparently, it won the Spiel des Jahres many years ago, and it's still well-liked and talked about today on the board. But what is it like digitally, and does it work? I'm here to just flat out say I think it does. I'll explain the game as well, but I like the game quite a bit. This will be like my first digital board game review, so let me see how good I can do it. Go at explaining this. Actually, no, it's not my first digital board game review. Oh, I won't, because it's going to be good.
A lot of pressure.
Ain't no damn pressure. So you're playing a board game. Move pieces and win. There. I say buy it. How's that? I kid. All right. Let me do the real review. So the premise of Istanbul is that you are one of many merchants, likely four players, vying for, I guess let's just call it control of the market. And this is done by getting a set number of rupees before other players can get that set number of rupees. How do you get rupees? Well, the board is made up of a 4x4 grid of locations. And at the beginning of the game, you start out at the location known as the fountain. Your player piece is composed of, let's say, four discs Well, five discs. Your main piece and then four discs below it. Those discs are considered your assistant characters. On each turn, you are able to move your stack of chips one or two spaces. And when you go to a spot, you are able to perform whatever action exists at that location. And there are a variety of different actions that exist in this game, all with the overall goal being to eventually get rupees or rubies. So, for example, if you there's a place called the tea house, where if you go there, it's a little like a dice mini game where you choose a number, then you roll two dice, and depending on if you get above that number you guessed, you'll get that much money that you wagered or that you guessed. And if you don't get it, you'll just get a default two coins. Other places will be like resource acquisitions and things of that nature, but I'll go into a little bit more of that shortly. So when you go to a location and you perform the action, which you can only do if you have some assistance on your person, you then leave that assistant behind. And on your next turn, you move your stack and do it again and again, going to different locations, performing their functions. Eventually, you'll run out of assistance unless you either go back to a previous location where you left an assistant behind, in which case you can reclaim them, or you go back to the fountain location and you'll allow you to pull all of your assistants back to work with you. Now, if you move next to another player on a move, you have to pay them money to be in their presence because your opponents are jerks and no one likes them. but of course, there is a way around that, believe it or not. And it's a pretty funny mechanic in the game. One of the locations is a police station. And if you go to the police station, your no good criminal relative is locked up in prison. You can let them out for free and then tell them to go anywhere on the board to perform that spot's function. And when you send them there, if there's another player on that spot, they are, do not have to worry about paying them to be there because they're a criminal. They don't follow rules. They do what the hell they want. So that's a good way to kind of get past, you know, your opponents who are blocking spaces. However, if they decide to, an opponent can walk up to your relative and get them sent back to jail and get three coins as a reward for sending them back. So it's a little bit of a double-edged sword there. Now, let me think about how to describe some of the different functions in this game. So your character has a wheelbarrow. The wheelbarrow can store resources, which are used in trades in various locations on the map. Some of those locations will allow you to trade for powers, which will then make it easier for you to get to the point where you have the resources required to get rupees. But in addition to that, sometimes you can go to a place where if you pay seven coins, it's called the Wainwright is the location, if you pay seven coins, you are able to expand on the wheelbarrow to hold more items. So then when you go to places that allow you to get resources, it will allow you to hold more because your wheelbarrow is freaking awesome. And of course, if you expand and upgrade enough on the wheelbarrow, you'll eventually get access to a rupee, which gets you closer to winning the game.
This Can is I just weird. Point out what a shitty economy this game has, where turning somebody in gets you three coins, but it costs you seven for a bigger wheelbarrow.
Pretty much. You have to put yourself in harm's way too. It's like this family member can have a, well, they don't have guns in this stand. He could have a poisonous snake. It could bite you. Or I don't know. He
risk could beat your you life for three coins.
Better believe it, man. It gets expensive in this Istanbul trying to get them rubies, baby. Every coin counts. But it's honestly, I'm trying to think of like how to best explain because there's a lot going on in this game. And yet at the same time, it's really simple and straightforward. There are locations where you can get bonus cards. And what bonus cards are just like one-time use abilities such as get a free resource or, I don't know, call one of your assistants back without having to go collect them or going to the fountain. Stuff like that to make it like, you know, kind of help you get out of a clutch situation and things of that nature. There are other, there's a ton of different locations. Again, like I said, there's 16 different locations, but you get used to all of them as you play the game. And beautifully enough, the interface for the game makes it easy to get used to them too, because it honestly does a really good job of explaining every little thing. The beginning of the game, there's a tutorial where there's like this little fake merchant guy. He's like, hi, I'm your new friend. Let's learn about the country of Istanbul as we become great merchants together. Of course, he stabbed me in the back because it has to be a tutorial where he plays against you. What a jerk. But basically, they do a good job of explaining the game to you. And as you're playing it itself, there's like a bunch of different options where when you click on a space, the game will allow you to get like a description of what the space does and how it works. And even as you go through making selections and options, it actually allows you to retrace your steps and go back as long as you didn't like do a final commit. So you can kind of just like step through what options you want to take to make the turn and not fully commit to them just until you get used to how the game works. And then all of a sudden you'll be a freaking savant making your turn and move decisions. And honestly, I came away really enjoying it. Like, I like this game a lot. I can see why it won awards, because it deserves them. And the gameplay here is very solid. It offers online play and local play. So you can set up a Switch, like set up on your countertop or on your TV, get four Joy-Cons out, and boom, you're all playing Istanbul together, because there's no real need for hidden information in this game. Everything's displayable, is visible to every other player. So you're basically just like, okay, who's going to do the best, the fastest to win the game, which is good. There's a lot of strategic meat here. Even the board layout, like I said, there's like a 4x4 grid and all the different locations pertaining to each one. It has configurations where you can determine how you want the different locations to be strewn out. So there's like an easy, medium, and hard level. And there's also a randomizer where it just like throws the locations out in whatever order you want. It's just a random order, and you just have to play to that standard, which means that the game will have a ridiculous amount of replayability to it. Is there a first thing to ask, though? Because, again, this is a board game, and it's... And without having the board game physically here, it's a little tougher to get, but I'll get used to it. But can you think of anything off the top where you're like, I heard what you said, but I'm not quite sure I'm getting a certain mechanic?
Is this something that is enjoyable single player, or is this something that requires having multiple people?
I'm going to say what I think in regards to like how board games are in general for me. Board games for me have always been about playing, you know, with my friends. I love playing with my friends. It's just what I do. But with that said, I do know that there is a large, and I mean large, contingent of solo board game players. Now, they're on the normal board game scope, they do make games specifically designed for single player use. And the reason why they do that is because there's no real AI in real board games. Either you have friends or you don't.
Yeah.
So in the case of games like this, though, if you're a solo board game player, the AI does the job for you. And honestly, if you're already interested in the idea of playing a board game by yourself, you're going to have fun with this too. Because on one hand, you're not going to be able to taunt someone from across the room, but the AI is very smart or very dumb, because you can change the settings. Ha ha ha. The AI is competent, and it will give you a run for your money to work to win some games. So you can play the game against the computer, just genuinely have a good time with it, or hone your skills to eventually play against your friends or just randos online or something. But I honestly think the game is a lot of fun. I played it pretty much solo by myself this time here, and I enjoyed every bit of it. I didn't find it boring at all. And I do believe that if anything, it would be more fun if I was playing with my friends.
Nice. So overall, $20 on it. What do you say?
Worth the money. Buy it. Get it. And enjoy running the market with your rupee empire. And I keep saying rupees, even though they're clearly rubies, but it's on the Switch, so I got Zelda on the brain. What can I say? but I think it's a great game. Wholeheartedly recommend it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah, so now I got the itch. I got to start looking for more digital board games. Got to get in there.
Well, let me know when you find one.
I will, good sir. I will.
Awesome. Well, Pernell, that is it with you. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Nope. Just keep playing those games and listen to that game music and just be good to each other. Don't be dicks.
All right. Speaking of dicks, Chris Taylor, you're here. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
I figure Pernell said don't be dicks, and our catchphrase on the show is speaking of dicks.
Uh-oh.
Wow. You're not a dick. I love you.
Aw, I love you too.
Aw, we're friends.
You hear that podcast? We love each other.
Aw.
Aw.
If only it was still Valentine's Day.
Oh, dear.
How was your weekend?
Pretty good. I don't remember much of it, so it must have been fun. Actually, I've been trying to get all the way through Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, because I actually, a friend of mine was so intrigued by seeing me play it that she went out and bought her own copy, and she plays games way faster than I do, so it's kind of like a race to the finish.
Nice.
So I've been revisiting that one a lot lately, which is pretty cool.
That's one I need to play still.
Yeah, I think it's really good. And it goes on. It goes on for a while. It's a pretty meaty game.
I think I used to have it on PS3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure what changed between that version and this one, but yeah, who knows?
I don't know either. But speaking of RPGs, you ready to get to this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. First game to talk about with you is called Vaporum, developed by Fatbot Games, published by Merge Games, released April 9th on PS4, 10th on Xbox One, 11th on the Switch for $24.99. Vaporum is a grid-based dungeon crawler RPG in an original steampunk setting inspired by old-school classics of the genre. Stranded in the middle of an ocean and in front of a gigantic tower, the hero has to find out what the place is, what happened there, and most importantly, who he is. Chris, who is he?
I don't know. He's got a nice, deep, manly voice, though.
Sweet.
That's
manlier than mine?
Probably, but I don't know. I can't say, because who is to say? It's a weird metric anyway. I just mean his voice is deep and sounds like cigarettes.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Well, it's got this very, like, it almost has this... It opens up like almost like a kind of, you know, mystery novel sort of, maybe even a noir type of thing, but without, you know, without the shadows in the office and, you know, the dame coming in clutching pearls and stuff like that. Like, it's missing all that, but it's about a guy who he ends up on an island somehow, doesn't remember how, but there's this giant ass building that looks like an obelisk called the... Arx Vaporum, and so he walks on in, and that's where your story starts. So yeah, it is very much a kind of piece it together as you go type of thing. So yeah, so the game is first person, and they say yeah, it's grid based. So it's a grid based like first person kind of game. However, and you know what that means is that instead of moving continuously in a game like in Skyrim. Instead, you're moving from space to space. So when you push the directional button, then, you know, you just walk over to that space. You know, think like Phantasy Star or, you know, any of those classic, you know, wizardry type things.
As waiting for only... you to drop Etrian Odyssey.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you could also say Etrian Odyssey. However... the action in this game is live. That is to say, when an enemy spots you and comes to attack you and murder you viciously to death, you have to fight back on a timer-based sort of attack system. So there's not really a whole lot of menuing going on here. It's mostly, if you got something in your hand, then you push the shoulder button to attack with it. Of course, your first weapon that you obtain in the kind of tutorial floor is a crowbar, and the game even gave a little wink and a nod to Half-Life for including a crowbar there. So, nice. You know, game's got jokes. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty serious pants most of the time, but you know, sometimes they'll sneak some stuff in there. And, you know, you get guns and you get other things. One thing I found really interesting is that very early on, you are given the choice of different types of, like, basically protective suits that you can wear to protect yourself against the environment. And, of course, depending on which suit you have actually will determine what kind of stats and what kind of, like, character build you're going to have. So, you know, you have the higher attack suits or the higher defense suits or the, you know, more tactical suits. And I found that a really interesting way to sort of add in an element of... Because you can't change your suit once you put one on is the key. So it's kind of like deciding your character, but you're just deciding your suit. I actually found that very clever. So yeah, when he, and then of course, once you get into the kind of exploration, bit of it, you get a nice auto map, which you get to just push the big center button on the PS4. I'm not sure what that button is called. And, you know, just kind of track your progress and stuff and go about solving puzzles, pushing boxes into holes or onto buttons, and then, like, you know, uncovering keys, searching old lockers. And the game was nice enough to kind of include a BioShock style, like audio diaries thing that kind of, you know, you sort of piece together the story that way through. Yeah. Conveniently. Plot, you know, conveniently left behind plot related items, which is always a good way to tell a game story. And the enemies that attack you largely seem robotic. They can range anywhere from like a little piddly attack drone to like a giant, like massive thing that's just like really cool looking. Kind of like the thing in the BioShock, the Big Daddies, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
A little bit like that, which is really cool. And of course, this game is pretty hefty on the lore that is available to you. Like, they don't just, you know, they don't unfold everything before you like a book, but that it's more like you get a dictionary and you can fill it out as you go. Like the enemy. There's an enemy list and like item lists and things like that. And like most descriptions of everything, like they'll actually have a lore section that's like paragraphs long about like attack drones.
Oh, nice.
So you can really put together the world if you like. I mean, all that's an optional menu type thing. As far
it just
as
shows
like,
a lot of care went into the game.
Yeah, it does. It's a well put together game. A couple things I appreciate is that this is an old school dungeon crawler and, basically, it has an autosave system for certain things, but oftentimes what ended up happening is that I would get a little bit far in a floor and then end up accidentally walking into a spike pit, which is instant death. And the way that death is in this game is that you just reload from the last time you saved. And autosaves, I think it just autosaves. I don't even know when it autosaves. Seemingly when you enter a floor, but I don't know. Either way, there is a lot of times where I forgot to just keep saving every few steps in a new area, and thus I would die and like get knocked back like 20 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah, that's always discouraging, but that's very traditional for a dungeon crawler. And in fact, you know, I'm lucky to be able to save it all, I suppose. So one thing you're going to have to learn in this game is to save as often as possible. Enemies, though, at least there's a way around that in that the game has a very casual mode. That is to say, you know, it basically makes combat like a spectator thing. Like, just hit the enemy until they die. They aren't going to really kill you, I don't think. At least none of them got me that way. But then again, I did pick the high defense suit as well. But it is funny because changing the difficulty all the way down to casual does not change things like spike traps, which are instant death, or walking into steam, which caused a lot of damage. And I was like, why did this cause so much damage? I was like, oh yeah, I'm playing in casual mode and I'm not used to taking damage. So that was on me a little bit. And, you know, the steam room thing ended up being a puzzle as well. So got through that. But yeah, like, the main thing I really liked about this game is the design of the dungeon and the enemies. And I really appreciated how fluid it looks for being grid-based. So, you know, I was really looking forward to seeing what was around every corner and, like, you know, just even though lots of it's just dark machinery type things, it's actually really cool to look at. Couldn't find a soundtrack. Maybe there's one later, but in the parts of the game I played, there was music in the title, and then you get into the dungeon, it's just kind of silence and footsteps, and I was like, ah, come on, guys. You know, that's me. I like my soundtracks.
Yeah, you love your music.
Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Well, overall, $25 on this one. What do you say?
I say $25. Definitely enough care went into this. It seems like a pretty good game for length. There seems to be a lot of story to uncover, and I appreciate that. So, you know, I'm looking forward to playing it some more. If dungeon crawlers are your thing and you like the live action aspect. Even if you don't, you can throw it on casual mode and get through it that way. It really is more for the dungeon crawler and puzzle type of person. There's not the action part of it is just a live action RPG, so it's not really gonna provide like the same experience as something like BioShock, which is just hair raising, jump scares and things like that every corner.
Yeah.
Stuff screaming at you. But no, it's a cool game. I think that it's got a really cool like vibe to it, and certainly it scratches that itch for exploration and sudden, inevitable danger. So I say, yeah, it's a good one.
Nice. Sounds good. I will have to pick this one up myself on Xbox. This sounds really good.
I'm considering it on Switch since I play most everything on Switch. So.
All right. Well, the other game that you're here to talk about is called Inferno Climber Reborn, developed and published by Arc System Works, released March 28th on Switch, PS4, and Windows 10 for $12.99, which go figure. It's on PS4, Switch, and Windows 10, but not on Xbox One. Why? Huh. And it even has achievements.
It's on Windows 10. Does that not automatically mean Steam? I don't know computers.
I don't know what the Steam status is. I'm just going off the information I'm given. I know a lot of games aren't showing up on Steam anymore. They're going to Epic Store or other places. I don't, it might already be on Steam. I didn't look it up. I'm an idiot.
This is why I play Switch.
This is why I'm a console guy too. It just keeps shit easy.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. This is a legend about a world called Hell. 100 years later, an innocent soul made a pact with death. The awakened ones set forth in search for the Purgatory Stones. Defeat powerful bosses to collect all 5 Purgatory Stones in Hell. Chris, tell us about this one.
All right, this is an interesting one. Funny enough, it's another live-action RPG type of thing, but it's not really... I don't suppose it's a dungeon crawler, because it's got just straight-up levels in it. And it's less exploration and more goal-oriented, but damn it, I like it when my games have slight links to each other. Actually, I'll tell you the one on this one, a scarce soundtrack. I'm going to get that out of the way right now. It has hardly any music in it. Mm. But don't let that scare you. Let's talk about this. So, this is a game where you choose your character from a roster of, I forgot to count, I think it's like 10 different classes. Each one having a special ability and a special, like, sort of affiliation for a certain weapon. Typical RPG stuff. You've got your young warrior who's kind of good at everything, kind of the tutorial style character, but not super good at anything. Then your knight that can equip better, heavier weapons and armor and stuff like that. And, your bow guy and your magic guy and your priest who, I guess they learn healing magic or something. I'm not exactly sure. I didn't pick one. And then you've got your... Then instead of having a thief class, it has an innocent prisoner class, which is interesting because it kind of looks like a thief, but also it just has like more strength. And I'm not exactly sure what that means. I don't know. But in fact, there's a final class that's called Nameless One. And it's just a guy who has no abilities and no special stats. So I picked that one. All right. It's just a dude. I kind of appreciated that. So I was like, well, might as well. And as soon as you pick your character, the game proceeds to kind of provide your backstory, which of course will suit the character. But no matter what, it always ends up that you are on the precipice of the end of your adventure, where you have to face off against a powerful dragon wielding a sword the size of like a office building. And you get there and your friends are like warning you, no, don't go, this dragon is really vicious and he just killed me and these are my final words and stuff. And you go to attack the dragon and he immediately kills you. And so the game starts with you getting revived from having been killed foolishly. Although, funnily enough, so you're talking to Death at this point, and he tells you kind of what's going on. He's like, hey, you died, and I'm going to give you another chance, but you have to bring me these 5 purgatory stones and conveniently scattered across 5 different levels that you can access. And at some point, it asks you, like, it's asking you philosophical questions about the sins of man and stuff. And it's like, where do the sins of man make him end up? And you can choose to say hell or heaven. If you choose heaven, it just sends you right back to that final boss fight so you can die again. And if you choose hell, then it starts the game. I just thought it was really funny that the game just gives you the option to, like, fight the, like, bullshit, you know, way overpowered final boss, like, as many times as you like, essentially. This is the kind of thing where I want to test it and see how many times it'll let me before it makes me, like, before it's like, dude, you're not doing this right. Like, I want to keep going to heaven.
Go on with the game. Jesus, man.
You're breaking it. So anyways, so then you wake up, apparently in hell, although it looks more like just a standard graveyard. And after fighting your way through, you know, figuring out how to equip weapons, how to equip potions, which it's all like kind of like double button hotkey type stuff. There's no real menuing in the game. And in fact, you know, like some high difficulty games out there, it, you know, the hotkey stuff is like, you have to move fast because there's no way to really pause the action and like do all this stuff. So if you need to like, if you need to get that potion into your hand really quickly, you got to do it while stuff's coming after you. So, you know, it's not keeping the challenge away on that one. But, so yeah, you know, figure out your items and stuff and get to the end of the tutorial. And then you get to a base where, you get to then choose which level you want to go to, but that's basically like, just go to the forest level. Okay. Don't you bothered me enough already. And, and so Death kind of serves as your central hub. And in fact, we'll buy and sell items and like, you know, you can rest up at the base of stuff. And like, Death's serving a pretty, like, Death is basically every NPC in the game, like all rolled into one, which I was like, dang, way to really flesh out the character, people. And then here's the interesting thing is that, you know, if you send your character out into a level and your character gets killed, which is basically going to happen because this game is fairly difficult, then you don't get to just revive that character and try again. You actually have to then take another character from that character tree that I mentioned earlier, that list of characters. You have to start another one and purchase a death contract from Death that basically says it's basically the same thing you signed at the beginning of the game. And then you got to go find the body of the left behind ethereal skull of the person who just got killed. And then, you know, use the contract on them in order to continue the game with that character. Yeah. And that's the only other game I've seen that happen in is actually the first Wizardry game. Where if your team dies in the dungeon, you have to formulate another team and send that team to rescue them. So this game has that element, and I thought that was really interesting. Because, yeah, as you level up, if you put too much time into one character and they get killed, you might be sending a level, like, one character after them, and that's no good. I think, though, because my character was level 4 the first time he died this way, all the other characters I could choose from were in level 4 to start. So I think they all might level up at the same time. And you can actually choose to use any of them at as long as you're in your hub. So I guess this is a thing where you can like you know, pick your 2 or 3 best character types and just go level them up and things. So anyway, I thought that was a really fascinating part of this game. And I'm interested in seeing how exactly that fleshes out later. In the more advanced levels. So the other thing, like I said, about the, mainly about the combat, it's live action. You have to equip a weapon and use it, and all items are breakable, of course. This is basically, you know, it's kind of a Breath of the Wild all over again.
Yay.
Yay,
breakable weapons.
Yeah. which, you know, actually I found kind of funny, because if you die in the tutorial, then they don't do that whole rescue bit. You just start over and, you know, you get to basically use a warp to get to the point where you last were. And but if you do like that, all the treasures reset, so you can actually just keep picking up like different items and shields and stuff like that before you start your real adventure, which I thought was pretty interesting. But anyways, yeah, the combat is kind of interesting because it's, like I said, it's live action that way. And the problem with it kind of is that if you get hit, you and your character gets knocked back, sometimes the camera will just point at something else. And you have to realign it yourself before you can find your character to even see what's happening. And that caused me some deaths there. Past that, it's basically Legend of Zelda style. It's, you know, one shoulder button lets you hold your shield and kind of target enemies, and then the other shoulder button, you know, or sorry, the Y or X button will let you like attack the enemy that is in front of you with whatever you've got. If you have a bow, then it goes into an aiming screen. You can optionally go into an aiming screen if you don't want to just like try your luck hitting whatever's at the center of the camera. Although, interestingly, while I was like moving around with the bow, I noticed when I hit the aiming screen button, it just kind of took my character out and just sort of put a reticule in place so I could aim. And I'm like, like, whoa, that's weird. Because, you know, I like to lean on that bow heavily in Skyrim, and they actually do change the perspective. But in this one, they're just like, just change the character for a reticule and let him aim. And like, it also, it fires arrows at a point where it just looks like the person just threw it. Just kind of tossed an arrow over there. But anyways, I ended up not using a bow and arrow character. mostly for that. But yeah, I mean, past that, the game is well thought out. I especially like the new things that they attempted, or I suppose reviving some old things. My only real complaint, besides the lack of a soundtrack, is also that the game kind of drags a little on the FPS. It's like, I'm going to say consistently under 30 on the Switch. It's like, you know, it moves around not super fast or anything like that. And I actually, to me, it felt like playing a really good Nintendo 64 game, but like, that's it. So, you know, it took a little while to actually get used to how slow everything moved, but overall, I actually really quite liked the game. And the art style, I guess I forgot to mention, it kind of like, everybody's got big heads and like little skinny arms and like kind of, cylindrical bodies. It actually, everybody kind of looks like a 3D stick figure.
Nice.
In this game. But that's by choice, and I actually like it. It's a good art style. But yeah, overall, it's interesting. It's kind of quirky, and I'm really looking forward to checking out more of it.
Awesome. Then $13 on it, what do you say?
Yeah, $13. I mean, I'm describing it like it's a full-on like $60 game, you know. I'm like, yeah, using that as a comparison thing. Like, this is better than a lot. This game, for one, it attempts more than I think a lot of your 10-ish, $10 to $15 games even try to go for, you know? So I really appreciate that they built it up this much. You know, of course, there's a bit of a ceiling that you hit when it comes to these kind of indie games, but I mean, at least they hit it in a pretty spectacular fashion. So I say $13. This is definitely worth a try, and it will definitely hold your interest because it's a pretty cool like little adventure, I think.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yep.
And the original Inferno Climber, I'm not sure what the difference is with Reborn, but the original Inferno Climber is on Steam. So,
oh, okay. Yeah, I'm just used to this by now. Like, when it comes to Switch games, it's like, if it's an indie game that's ever existed anywhere else, they like add some modifier to the end of the title for Switch. Yeah. So I'm like, I kind of ignore that stuff now.
Makes sense. Like,
yeah, I was like, it's the Switch version. It's not like they're gonna go and release the not Reborn version on Switch, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the definitive version to me, because that's the system I play.
Good stuff. Well, Chris, always good having you on chatting about this kind of stuff. Do you have any final words?
I don't know. I think you can be dicks if you want to.
All right. And finally tonight, Jacob Garner's joining us. Jacob, how's it going?
It's going. I'm sick again.
Oh, shocker.
I know. Warning to all viewers, this is what happens when you get kids and also get married. So I just blame everybody.
Well, thankfully, I only have cats.
Yeah, I know, but that's like sad in its own right.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, there's like the crazy cat lady, but the crazy cat guy, I don't know.
At least that's married. I have that going for me. Kind of.
I know. Condolences to your wife.
Yeah, I feel bad for her too.
So how are you doing?
I am tired as hell, and I am ready to get this show over and done with. How about you?
I mean, hell, I've only been on the show for like 30 seconds now, and I've already been tired and like ready to get done with the show. So
it's been a minute, you goddamn liar.
It feels like,
it feels like forever.
Yeah. All right. So
should we do this?
Yeah, I was like trying to get you to do that.
I don't know. I thought you wanted to talk more.
What are we going to talk about?
I don't know. What the fucking whatever.
I don't know. I mean, like, sometimes you're like, oh, Jacob, what have you been playing? And I'm like, oh, well, I've been playing ReCore still. I finally got past the core part. Like, God, what is it? The core assembly area or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I finally got past that. I have no idea where exactly I am in the game, like in terms of the game.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I know. You really need to get playing with that game. It's like, it's plenty of fun. I really do need to like buy it before my Xbox Game Pass subscription runs out.
Yeah, it's cheap enough.
Shit, what the heck else was I playing? Oh, I started playing Bedlam. It's like Bedlam by Christopher Lambert.
Oh, yeah.
Or something. It's really not Christopher Lambert, but
I know what you mean.
I think it was like $3.99 during the Xbox Live Horror Sale or whatever it was.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's enjoyable so far. So far, I'm in the like the Doom marathon ish levels, and it's like a nice throwback to like those first person shooters from the 90s. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's some game where like you're trapped in like different video games, and so you're like genre bending. So I know that there's eventually like a World War II like world. And then later on it gets really trippy with like 1980s like pixel and vector shit.
Nice.
So
there's another game I need to dive into eventually.
Do you have it or no?
I'm sure, dude, I have 2,400 games on my console. I'm sure it's there.
That's fair. I think there's only like, what? How many games
six
do I have?
Six on yours.
Yeah, I know. I also bought Conan for the Xbox 360.
Nice.
The Alien Breed trilogy.
Mm.
So I got those while those were all like $1.25 a piece.
Nice. Those are good games.
Yeah, I remember you and John liking them back in the day. So
I remember the Alien Breed games, and then I think the not Duke Nukem, Serious Sam. They had collections on disc in Europe that were pretty much just the game files put onto a game disc, and you would copy them to your hard drive, or it would install it to your hard drive, DRM free.
Oh, wow.
So people put them online and they just spread like wildfire. It wasn't like a hacked game or anything. All you had to do was copy it to your system and it worked. Huh. Because there was no copyright protection on the game files at all. So someone fucked up big time with those.
Whoops.
Yeah, just a little.
I mean, I ended up buying all the Serious Sam games that they put out for the 360 anyway.
Yeah, same here. And the Alien Breed games.
Yeah.
But in a past life, I was a more unscrupulous character.
You're pretty still unscrupulous.
Yeah, I am. But I pay for my games now.
So you have more scruples then.
Allegedly.
So, anyway.
Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Bow to Blood, Last Captain Standing, developed and published by Tribe Toy Incorporated, released April 3rd on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $19.99. Become a captain, fly your ship, and command your crew as you compete to become the champion in a winner-takes-all reality show. Build relationships and plot betrayals to avoid getting voted off the season and becoming the last captain standing. Jacob, tell us about it.
All right, so in Bow to Blood, you're this captain who gets thrown on the ship with a couple of crew members, and you find out that you're on a reality show, a la Running Man. And pretty much, it's just as the game describes. You know, you have to compete in all these events as the season progresses, and I think it's, like, what, 10? Like, 10 quote-unquote episodes or missions or whatever. And you get to forge alliances with other people. You also could piss off other people, and yeah, you'd pretty much just have to make it to the end of the season and to win your freedom. So
that sounds deceptively easy.
It does sound deceptively easy, yet the game is not for a number of reasons. The first off being is that I believe, what I had read is that this was originally developed for the PSVR. Last year, and it's now making the jump to other systems.
To flat screens instead of VR screens.
Right. I could see it being a really neat VR title, but I found it to be, first off, semi-confusing, because it just is like, all right, here's some of your controls. Bye. Have fun. But then also, as the captain, you have to stand at a very specific point on your ship, and your ship ends up taking up most of your view screen, so you don't really get a good look at the world, and so it was a little confusing in that regard, but eventually you kind of get used to what you have to deal with, and you pretty much, like, you know, you just go in between, you have missions, and in between missions, you can talk to your opponents, and, like, you can either work together, or you can be like, yo, screw off, I'm gonna, like, fuck you over. And, you know, it will either help keep you on, like, presumably if you don't do as well, or, you know, they could be like, well, screw this guy and vote you off. Or just, like, make sure you don't score enough points and then just come at you ham. Yeah, it was just, I mean, there isn't a lot of variety to it. Like, I mean, there's some variety to the missions. Like, some of them are just like, you have to, like they're races. And so you just have to get there as quickly as you possibly can. Other ones are like death matches where you have to, like, just kill everybody in the arena. Races can kind of screw you over because they're not worth as nearly as much, and so it can mess you up on the leaderboard. But overall, I mean, even though there isn't much of a variance between the mission types, I still found it kind of fun. If anything, the most grating aspects of the game were the announcer, which is always... Announcers always seem to be the bane of just about any of these types of games.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it's either... Actually, I'm trying to think of any video game that has a really good announcer.
Smash Brothers.
I always like the one from Monday Night Combat. But it's just like, this is like the game... Like, he ends up being along the lines of not nearly as bad as RBI Baseball 19, but He's somewhere between RBI Baseball 19 and John Madden.
I was waiting for you to say he's somewhere in between RBI Baseball 19 and RBI Baseball 18.
I actually don't remember the announcer from RBI Baseball 18, so I can't throw in that one. That one, amazingly enough, is not fresh in my head. So it's just like, the announcer's grading and your view, like trying to like figure out where you're at is not exactly the easiest thing. And it's just the game just like it really doesn't explain itself that particularly well. So don't be surprised if like, you know, you get kicked off your season and then have to start all over again.
Which is what happened to me. You mentioned before, you know, the races might not help you with the leaderboard. You want to know what helped me with the leaderboard?
No, but you're going to tell me anyway.
Nothing. I was last place the entire time. The first time I didn't get voted off because I made friends with some people, but the second time it was a lost cause.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of luck with this game, but I mean, I found it to be kind of fun. There's some areas for improvement with it, but like I could definitely see it being like a much bigger title if they're willing to give it like another go round at it, like a sequel title, you know?
Yeah.
So
I thought you had more to say there.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's just like the controls were a tad wonky. I didn't like the view, like the limited view. And sometimes I felt like, cause remember how you have to switch out to your pistol to take care of the missiles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I didn't always feel like that was particularly effective. And it's just, I don't know. There's a few things, like, I think it's a pretty solid idea. I think they just need to work on it a bit more.
Well, then $20 on this one. What do you say?
I'd be more okay with 15, but 20, I'm all right with. Like, I think it has plenty of fertile ground for, you know, it's not for everybody, but I think, you know, I think you can have a lot of fun with it.
So are you in the buy it or try it camp?
For $20, I'm okay with saying buy it. It's not the strongest buy it, you know, that I've ever given on the show, but I'm okay with saying buy it for $20.
All right. I'm leaning more towards the try it category. It's just, I wish there was a little bit more information on what you're actually doing during the game. And it's really, really easy to get disoriented during the actual airship combat. And it didn't click that well for me.
Yeah. As I said, it wasn't the best game I've ever played. It didn't also, I will say this, the intro took forever to like, it did not hook me in like immediately. It took a little bit for this game to grow on me, but, I like it. You know, I actually hope that there is a sequel to it.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Jacob, thanks for coming on and chatting. Thanks again to Chris and Purnell for coming on, doing their thing as well. Going to play a couple of songs from Stemmage to wind out the episode. Yeah, wind out the episode. I can't even talk. I don't know words anymore.
What'd you say? Wind up the episode?
Wind out the episode.
Wind out.
Huh, yes. Nice. Wind down the episode. It's been a long weekend for me.
It's WrestleMania. Okay.
No, not WrestleMania. Yeah. Kofi Mania. Fuck yeah, Kofi Mania.
Yeah, I heard about that. I haven't like watched any of it. I really don't pay attention to wrestling at all. Though I did hear John Cena made an appearance.
Oh my God, his appearance was so good too. He came back as the Doctor of Thugonomics and started rapping during the show, and then just beat the shit out of Elias.
I don't know who that is, but great.
it was fantastic. Trust me, John, it was good.
Like when I had my roommate, what year was it? That would have been junior year of college, like the one who was addicted to wrestling. He's still addicted to wrestling.
Back in the 40s.
You and him would actually get along really great. John Cena was the only one who actually piqued any interest out of me, and I really wish that he would have just taken on the entire Spirit Squad and like knocked the shit out of him. I fucking hated Spirit Squad so damn much.
I know, that's the only wrestling reference I ever get from you is the Spirit Squad.
Oh my God, they were obnoxious little shits, and I fucking hated every single one of them. Ugh, fucking A.
Well, on that note, do you have any final words to end the episode?
I'll be honest, I'm kind of disappointed with this week's Xbox sales. You know,
those are terrible final words. Like, you're not, I'm not asking for a final conversation. I'm talking about final words to end the episode.
I don't know. I mean, I thought we'd actually discuss something for once.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah, man. The sale is kind of lackluster, but I think it's because the spring sale's coming.
Oh, word? How long? Wait, when's that coming?
I don't know. That's why I said I'm sure it's because the spring sale is coming.
Damn it. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you'd already cut off the audio.
No, it's still going, you dickhead.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the sale. Oh, my God.
So all right. The viewers do not want to hear any more from me. Just cut off. We'll be right back.